Today, we are in Mark chapter 9. It's been kind of an interesting run. As you look at the book of Mark, it kind of climbs and builds until you get to Mark chapter 8. Everything looks forward to Mark chapter 8. And then from Mark chapter 8, everything seems, to me anyway, to just kind of be unpacking Mark chapter 8 from there. And so this Mark 8 discipleship begins with Jesus asking his disciples, who do people say that I am? And there were a number of different answers. Elijah, one of the prophets. And Jesus says, who do you say that I am? And Peter jumps forward and says, you are the Christ. That's right. He is the Christ. Moves from that to Jesus predicting his passion, his death. Takes Peter back. Takes all the disciples back. Peter jumps forward and rebukes Jesus and says, no, that's not the way it's going to happen. And Jesus says, get behind me. And then he, where we were last week, Jesus gives the cost of discipleship, is what it's called. He says, if anyone wishes to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow. Heavy stuff. There's, if you read that and you think about that and you let that settle in your soul, it's a heavy weight of discipleship. But I have to confess that the weight of discipleship feels, I've been around it for a while. I've been thinking about this particular aspect of discipleship for long enough that the weight of discipleship on my shoulders feels better than the kind of fluff I hear other places. And and just because it's more real. I mean, who wouldn't like a God who healed everything that we brought to him? Who wouldn't like a God who, when you gave a dollar, gave you 10 back? Cha-ching, you know, that's not bad. You know, who wouldn't like a God who gives us everything that we want? Of course we'd like that. But that God is a fairy tale. And the disciples are in the midst of having their fairy tale dismantled piece by piece by piece. And the weight of discipleship as Jesus is teaching it to them is overwhelming. Imagine how the disciples must have felt as their lofty ideas of who Messiah was were just taken apart piece by piece, shot down, and now they, not only is discipleship not this grand picture that they had, but now discipleship is something that's going to cost them skin. It's going to be painful. Imagine how they felt. How do you feel? You know, more than one person mentioned to me, man, the last few weeks have been kind of a bummer, kind of heavy. Well, the reason is, it's a little bit intense. You know, we're kind of in this part of Mark that's very serious. It's intense, and at times it's kind of scary. And that's why I love this passage that we're about to deal with in Mark chapter 9, because it's this kind of breather in the middle. Chapter 9, verse 1, Jesus was saying to them, truly I say to you, there are some of those who are standing here who will not taste death until they see the kingdom of God after it has come with power. Jesus is giving them a promise of a vision here. I don't know when, and I don't know how it works, but God gives glimpses of hope in the midst of hopelessness. He gives us flashes of light in the midst of darkness, because even the darkness is light to him. And this morning, if you're hanging on to faith by your fingertips, and you feel like somebody might be knocking on them with a hammer kind of thing, I hope that this morning is hope to you. I hope it's encouraging. Because Jesus is saying, to the disciples, I'm going to give you a glimpse into eternity that will show you that it is all worth it. 6 days later, would have been a long 5 days, don't you think? 6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter and James and John, and he brought them up on a high mountain by themselves, and he was transfigured before them. And his garments became radiant and exceedingly white, as no launderer on earth can whiten them. Elijah appeared to them along with Moses, and they were talking with Jesus. That's pretty incredible. From the depths of disillusionment, Jesus takes his disciples to the top of this mountain, and he shows them something marvelous. He gives them a glimpse of glory. Jesus loved these disciples enough that he would not allow them to simply struggle without hope. Now, let that one sink in on you for a second. If you're somebody like me, who sometimes hope is a little bit elusive, it's important to know that Jesus does not let us just flounder with no hope at all. He loves them enough not to leave them struggling for hope. So Jesus takes his disciples with him, Peter, James, and John, ordinary guys. Now, when I first read this, I thought, wait a second. How am I supposed to measure up to these? These are the top three, right? These are the inner circle. This is Peter, James, and John. Well, remember, these are normal guys. These are, they're not like, we're not talking super Christians here. Remember, Peter has just said, it's not that way, Jesus. And Jesus said, get behind me, Satan. James and John, these sons of thunder, they're the ones who are going to fight on who gets to sit on his right and who gets to sit on his left. Shotgun. Jesus takes ordinary guys with him to see his glory. Guys with sin and failure and doubts and fears. He takes guys just like us. People just like us. These people got to see Jesus in majestic, divine, glorious form. He's transfigured into light, it says. Like Moses, only better. Remember, Moses goes up the mountain in the Old Testament and he talks with God and his face begins to glow. This is even better because Jesus' whole body glows. He's talking with God. And then Elijah and Moses come and are with him. And for us, that's a little, interesting. Why Moses and Elijah? Well, they're eschatological figures. That makes it all clear, doesn't it? Word for the day, eschatological, end times. It's what the Jews were, whenever they looked to the end of the world, they said, okay, here's how it comes. When Messiah comes, it's going to come with the presence of Moses and Elijah. And so they believed that Elijah, maybe himself resurrected, or maybe another prophet like him, was going to come and be the forerunner of the Messiah. And they believed that Moses, the greatest of all the prophets and the deliverer of Israel, would somehow appear and deliver them one more time. So whenever Jesus allows these disciples to see him standing there with Moses and Elijah, it's God's way of saying to the disciples, this is the right one. This is the Messiah. And he may not look like you think he ought to look. He may not be the one that you thought he would be, but he's the one. This is him. And isn't it just like Jesus to give them a bunch of hard teaching and then give them this vision of hope? You know, nobody can dispute that the last few weeks of sermons, the last few passages in Mark are hard. It's hard stuff. I mean, Jesus is talking about his death. Peter gets rebuked, cost of discipleship. Imagine hearing that for the first time. Most of us have read it over and over, and we're still saying, man, that's hard stuff. These disciples hear it for the first time, and it's hitting them hard. Imagine what that was like. Not much of a motivator. And Jesus gives them, here's this motivator to press on. What was it, do you suppose, about Peter and James and John that they got to experience this? I'll tell you what I think it was. It's that they were disciples of Jesus. It's these three that accompany Jesus. They're close to him. They accompany him. They're intimately connected with Jesus. They accompany him everywhere he goes. And so they saw this. They were passionate about Jesus. Remember Peter at the Garden of Gethsemane? The soldiers come. Peter draws his sword. He's ready to go to battle. He may not be that smart, but he's passionate, right? The James and John, whenever Jesus is rejected in Samaria among the Samaritans, they want to call down fire from heaven. Why? Because they're passionate. I mean, they may not have the love of God in them, but they're ready to, you know, they're ready to fight for Jesus. These guys are passionate. It's nothing but untamed passion. And they wanted to be with Jesus more than anything else. Even the sins that we attribute to them and we say, oh, you know, Peter, he's so impetuous. They're all about passion for Jesus. No, you're not going to die. It's just about passion for Jesus. James and John, they want to sit on his right and his left. They want to be with Jesus. So Peter, James, and John, they stick so close to Jesus that they get to see what no one else saw. And the exciting thing is that I don't think this is unique to these guys. Now, Transfiguration, probably unique. But to be given a glimpse of hope, that's not unique. Like the disciples, you know, we get hard teaching, tough stuff. And if you've maybe been reading in the book of Mark, you know, I mean, we've been dealing with tough stuff now. We've got divorce coming up. We've got some tough stuff coming up. We have, you know, Jesus teaches we have to be meek. He wants to be a doormat. He says that we'll be judged on every careless word. Those are hard teachings. Like the disciples, we live lives where we go through some hard times of reflection, times whenever when we think, is this even real? You know, am I just deceived here? We go through times where we look at this cost of discipleship and we say, is this really worth it? Can I do it? And like the disciples, sometimes though we are in the light, we experience great darkness, times of discouragement, disillusion, despair. It happens to all of us. Times when you are so down, you're not sure you can hold out through the darkness. And it's in those times that Jesus gives us glimpses to his glory, that he might carry us through the night. Our glimpse of glory might take the form of a phone call from a brother or sister, or maybe even a text. It might take the form of a note. I remember one particularly difficult time in ministry whenever I was kind of weighing my options. You know, I was discouraged. Do I stay in ministry or do I greet at Walmart? I'm really not that friendly, so I opted for the ministry. But no. And I really didn't know what I was going to choose. And I came in and I sat down on my desk and I was moving things around on my desk and there was a note. And the note said, I believe in you. And it was signed God. And in parenthesis, so do I, Jan Ross. It blew me away. It was light in the darkness for me. It kept me going. A glimpse of glory might come in reading the Bible. I'll never forget the first time I really read Hebrews chapter 6, verse 10. And I've shared it with many of you because it's such a powerful verse to me. I'd read it, I don't know, hundreds of times probably, but I'd never really heard it, you know what I mean? It was another one of these times in ministry where things felt pretty dry. And I was feeling like, you know, is what I'm doing really, does it really matter? Does it really change the world? Does it really, who cares? You know that feeling? And I opened up my Bible and I read, God is not so unjust as to forget your work and the love which you have shown towards his name in having ministered and in still ministering to the saints. Never heard that verse before. It said, your service is not in vain. You matter. That regardless of whether anybody else noticed, regardless of whether I even noticed, God noticed. And it was light in the darkness. It was transformational. And I knew that I could go on. I could face the night because I had seen the light of God. Our glimpse, it may come in a million different ways. God is so creative. It may come in a dream or a vision or a touch or a voice or a sermon or a relationship. But it does come. And when it comes, you'll know it. These times of intense refreshing, they seldom come in the up times of your life. Do you know that? It is not the healthy who need a physician. It's those who are sick. It's those who are, it's not those who are happy who need the encouragement. It's those who are discouraged. It's those who are in the darkness that need light. And so it's those who are in the darkness that God gives that to. It's when you're trying to figure out how do I go on that I think that God meets you and shows you how. If you want to experience that kind of refreshing, then it takes the same thing it took the disciples. You have to be with Jesus. You have to keep seeking him. You have to keep your eyes open. If you don't, you might miss it. All this happens, and Peter says to Jesus, Rabbi, it is good for us to be here. Let's make three tabernacles, tents, one for you and one for Moses and one for Elijah, for he didn't know how to answer because they had become terrified. Then a cloud formed and overshadowed them, and a voice came out of the cloud. This is my beloved son. Listen to him. And they looked around, and they saw no one anymore except for Jesus alone. After the transfiguration was over, Peter made kind of a silly suggestion. He said, hey, let's all make tents and let's stay here for a while. Now, the suggestion, though ill-conceived, is common. Peter wants to stay on this mountaintop forever. It's like, yes, this is what we're after. I don't want this experience to end. But the experience does end, and it always does. After all, there's a mission to accomplish. And whenever Moses and Elijah go away and the glowing stops, Jesus is still going to die. The weight of discipleship is still on the shoulders of the disciples. There's no time to stop and smell the flowers. There's no time for tents, because the purpose of this experience is to give a glimpse of glory, not let us stand around and gander at it. It's to encourage, to bring light in the darkness. It's not to become a way of life. When you're discouraged and Jesus encourages you, whenever he brings light into your darkness, you'll understand Peter. I guarantee it. You won't say, oh, I can't believe he wanted to do that. You'll understand what he's talking about. But you can't stay on the mountaintop any more than he could, because you are still called to this mission. Tents are safer than facing life. There are no crosses in tents. When Moses and Elijah leave, Jesus is still heading to the cross. And these tents are so much better. You know, they're thinking, maybe if we stay here, we'll be okay. But somewhere deep down in Peter, he knew they had to go down the mountain because he knew there was more to this. Jesus really does take the time to encourage us. But he encourages us in our mission. And when it's over, it's back into the fray. It's like when you're watching a fight and the bell rings and everybody goes to their corners and they get a little drink of water and they spit and all that stuff. And then they ring the bell and they're back in the fray. That's the way it is. That's what the transfiguration is. And just because you can't build a tent, it doesn't mean the encouragement stops. It doesn't mean the encouragement is over or it's of limited value, because when you return to the battle, you return refreshed. Peter and James and John went down the mountain, changed men. When God encourages us, it changes us, that we might serve him better. It says, then a cloud formed and overshadowed them, and a voice came out of the cloud, "This is my beloved Son, listen to him." These guys heard the voice of God. Clearly, they heard the voice of God. And the voice of God says, listen to Jesus. Follow his leadership. It was the message of the whole encounter. Regardless of how difficult the teachings of Jesus are, and they are, love your neighbor, turn the other cheek, forgive your enemies, preach the gospel, take up a cross, deny yourself. Those are tough teachings. Regardless of how difficult the teachings of Jesus, the command of God is listen to him. Follow his word. Regardless of how much we of our feelings, of our circumstances, or how we might think things turn out, listen to him. It's kind of funny. Anytime that I preach a sermon like last week, deny yourself, take up a cross, follow Jesus, in one way or another, people always line up to say, here's my situation and why it's different and why I shouldn't have to deny. Always. Here's the reason that my egotism is really the truth. Always. When the weight of discipleship comes down on us, we all want to run. We all want to run. We all want to get out. We all want to wiggle out from underneath the weight. Anytime Jesus challenges you, it is that way. We all have times that we want to discount what he says. We want to do our own thing. We'd rather have a fake Jesus than the real one. Times whenever our passion for something is too great, our temptation is too strong, path is too difficult, the word of God in those moments is the same. This is my Son. Listen to him. Let's be honest this morning. Some of us have come this morning discouraged. Perhaps you never thought about discipleship costing this much. Maybe you didn't realize that Jesus requires everything. Perhaps you didn't know how difficult it would be to be his disciple. Perhaps this morning you're struggling with whether or not it's really worth the cost. You know, maybe there's something else out there. Perhaps tragedy has struck your life and you don't understand. Or maybe this path following Jesus is longer than you expected and you're not sure that you can make it all the way. Perhaps you have come this morning and it is night and it is dark and you're discouraged. Whatever the reason, know the reason that you're struggling with discipleship is that it is really hard. It is not easy. I mean, you don't want to know why it's difficult to follow Jesus? It's because it really is hard. It really is not easy. And Jesus wants to encourage you this morning. He does not want you to leave here this morning hopeless. Press into him. I know that it's hard, but whatever it takes, it's worth it. Trust me in this. If you pour your life into him, even when you're not sure why, you follow him anyway. And I promise you, if you stick with him, if you follow him, he will lead you to a mountaintop. He will allow you to see something that no one else sees, and you will hear the voice of God. He will find ways to bring light into your darkness. He'll give you hope and despair. And I know that because I've been there. He'll give light in your darkness, and I know that because I've been there. He will give joy in the midst of your mourning because I've been there. He will change your heart. Today, our invitation is going to be a little bit different. And what I want us to do is to pray for God to bring that hope in the midst of discouragement. I want to pray for those people who need encouragement right now, who've come this morning needing encouragement. And so what I'm going to ask you to do is very bold. I mean, following Jesus is always bold, right? And it's going to be something that you may not have done before. It's going to be something that's a little bit uncomfortable. But I'm going to ask you to be transparent with your brothers and sisters who are around you. And what I want you to do is to kind of group together with people who are sitting around you. Groups 3, 4, no more than 5. And I want you to go around the group and say, here's the discouragement I have in following Jesus. Please pray for me. This is not a time to come and pray for Aunt Ruth. This is a time to share our stories. Now, this is not a time to do big stories. You can't give the whole picture. Give a few little pixels, just enough to say, this is my darkness. Please pray that Jesus will show me the light. And I'm betting that he will. Let's do it.